Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy Geish with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, okay, it used to be 2 o'clock, but because I'm on a roadshow event right now, we're doing 1 o'clock for the next couple of months. But we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how to make that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. Before I introduce our guest, I want to take just one moment to define the revenue marketer, because we have listeners who call in and who download through iTunes, and a lot of them have never heard the term revenue marketer. But basically, a revenue marketer is a specific marketer who has or revenue related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. They are responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they are sales ready. And they all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice and to get revenue results. Every single revenue marketer that we have on the show began where you are today, and they're here to share their journeys, their successes, and their gotchas, so that your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and smoother. I am so pleased to announce today's guest, Rachel Spasser, who is the VP of Marketing at Ariba. And we have a really hot topic to talk about. It's called Demand Generation Gets Social. But before I bring Rachel on, let me tell everyone just a little bit about her. She is currently the Vice President of Marketing for Ariba, and in this role, she's responsible for design and execution of the company's demand generation and demand management programs. With over 20 years of experience in marketing, business development, and general management, Rachel has spent the last 13 years focused on the business-to-business technology space. Prior to joining Ariba, she worked in executive marketing roles with numerous software and internet-related companies like IBM, KnowledgeStorm, and Cox. Rachel holds an MBA with honors from the Goizueta Business School at Emory University in beautiful Atlanta. And Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Debbie.
Oh, I got to tell you, when you and I first connected and we began talking about the topic of demand generation and get social, I just absolutely had shivers. I think everybody who's doing demand generation right now wants to know more about how demand generation gets social. But before we kind of jump into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your role at Ariba? I gave a broad description, but maybe you can share with us a little bit more about your role at Ariba.
Certainly. At Ariba, I am responsible for all of the front-end demand generation activities, so events and campaigns, email, online, as well as the nurturing of leads to the point when they are sales ready. So that includes the field marketing team. It includes the lead qualification team. And then, interestingly enough, at Ariba, I'm also responsible for the mid-market sales team, which is wonderful because I get to see the leads that come in for the mid-market sales team and then watch them through fruition to really gauge how we're doing on the front end, feeding the sales team opportunities.
I got to tell you, that's really interesting that you've also got sales responsibility here, and I bet it does give you a very unique perspective on your demand generation activities.
Absolutely, it does. And you know, it's they say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And so this way, I get to lead the horse to water, and I get to make them drink too. So I get the whole end-to-end spectrum.
Well, I always tell people, you know, my background is VP of sales. That's what I've done for many, many years. And when I first began working with marketing automation systems and demand generation, I actually was at the only time in my career I was a VP of marketing. But having that VP of sales background was absolutely invaluable to helping me understand, you know, who cares about, you know, the open rate or the click-through rate. What we care about are high-quality leads being passed, or are they being converted at the appropriate rate? So that I'm just thrilled because that just has to give you the best perspective on everything related to demand generation.
Agreed.
So now the title of today's show, again, is Demand Generation Gets Social. And I'm sure based on this topic, we're going to have a lot of interest in finding out how to practically accomplish this. I forecast that this is probably going to be one of our most heavily downloaded episodes from iTunes. So let's begin, Rachel, with first, how do you think social fits into demand generation?
Well, I think taking a step back, if you look at business in general, I think today business is going social. And so, you know, while social really started out more as a consumer phenomenon, we're really seeing it permeate all aspects of business, and demand generation is just one of those aspects. So, in the past, I think people when they look at demand generation, they think it's got to be measurable, and social is not measurable, and therefore it can't be part of the equation. But through use of marketing automation systems and other tools, you really can understand how social is an asset to your overall marketing mix. And I think that that's really the key here is social fits into demand generation as one piece of a holistic approach to marketing. I would never recommend that it's the only piece in a B2B environment that you use, but it really it fits in with email, it fits in well with the web, and really at the end of the day, you're having a conversation with your prospects, and that happens in numerous places, and one of the ways it happens is through whether it's through your own communities. Ariba has its own community called Ariba Exchange, where there's peer-to-peer conversation going on. But also we moderate communities outside of the Ariba world that are very topical, like sourcing and procurement communities on LinkedIn. And so we have the opportunity to really understand what is resonating, what the issues are, what the needs are in the market, and use that in our marketing messaging as we're going back out.
That is very smart. So before we kind of move into a concrete example of how you've got social mixing in with demand generation, how long have you guys been down the social path?
You know, we actually started Ariba Exchange about 2 years ago, and probably about 2.5-3 years ago started to actively participate in LinkedIn groups. And we have two people on our marketing team that are dedicated to what we call community. So it could be internal community or external community.
So interesting, because people always wonder how do you staff that and what's the value in it. So when you guys started Ariba Exchange, kind of what have you learned from setting up that community?
The truth is, we had learned by watching others who had set up communities before us, and understood that this was a phased effort. So we didn't expect to launch a community and have hundreds of thousands of participants participating every day in our community. So what we did is we tried to pick the areas that we thought were most ripe for participation and for peer interaction, and start there, as well as bring forth our ideas from a product perspective and a vision perspective that really warrant good solid discussion, that aren't necessarily Ariba-centric, but that, you know, people could talk about, yes, this is what we need in order to do commerce better, that would then feed back into our product development cycle. So we really started out in a concentrated way and are now expanding that community to incorporate things like our support. So our support had been completely separate, and now it's being woven into Ariba Exchange so that people can help each other, right? If I have a question on, I forgot my password, how do I reset my password, they don't necessarily have to pick up the phone and call an 800 number or email our tech support. They can just post it out to the community, and someone else who's been through that exercise can answer the question for them. So we're expanding it out slowly, but in areas where we think it's highest value initially.
So far I've heard, when you think about your general social strategy, you have Ariba Exchange. You also moderate other communities. You have a LinkedIn group. Do you guys do work on Facebook as well?
We do. We have a general Facebook page, but then we also have Facebook pages for specific events. Like we have Ariba Live coming up, which is an event, a business commerce event that is coming up in April, and so we have a page for live as well. And then we do actually a lot with video. So a lot of videoing. Customers who have stories to tell, who are sharing ideas that might be helpful to others, and those videos live on Ariba.com, but they also live on YouTube, and then you know within other specific communities where they're where they're relevant.
Okay, and then how do you guys use LinkedIn?
So from a LinkedIn perspective, we really, we focus on LinkedIn groups, and we focus on using it both as a means to connect with like-minded people in terms of functional areas, but also as a way to connect from an industry perspective. So we moderate groups that discuss issues that are very pertinent to a particular industry and really start that discussion on LinkedIn, but then link people back to Ariba Exchange to continue the discussion. And that's actually part of how we build the community at Ariba Exchange. So we may have an expert from the financial services industry who is not an Ariba person, but who is leading the discussion around procurement in financial services. And then that individual continues that discussion on Ariba Exchange.
I love that idea. That's just a fantastic idea. And then what about Twitter, Rachel? How do you guys use Twitter?
We have a number of ways that we use Twitter in that we have a centralized social strategy where, and I told you we have two people who staff that. So one of those people does a lot of blogging and a lot of tweeting about current events, or not necessarily about Ariba current events, but about current events in our space. And then we also have the marketing team has an initiative out to Ariba, which we call Everyone's a Marketer. And we put out messages to our team that we think might resonate within their networks and then give them the ability to retweet those messages out to their communities. So we feel like that's really an important way to expand our network exponentially, by leveraging our employees, and when they feel like something might be relevant to their networks, they can just retweet out to those communities.
Again, I love that idea. And how long have you had your program, Everyone is a Marketer?
We launched that about 6 months ago. And, it's very interesting because the people who really embrace it are not necessarily the people that you would assume are going to embrace it. So we have some engineers who are retweeting every week. We have some people in customer service who are retweeting every week, and then we have some people in the marketing department who pick and choose and retweet periodically. So we've gotten some very good coverage as a result, and I think as Twitter's link to LinkedIn and Facebook, it really gives us a broad reach with minimal effort.
And again, I love that idea. I mean, it's just such an effective way because within any organization, people within that organization have their own network. So I could see where that would be very valuable. So that's kind of a good look, Rachel, at how you guys are using social media. And what I love about what you're doing is you just kept it simple, you kept it direct, you kept it concise. Let's talk about, within that strategy, how demand generation and social fits together, and can you give us an example of something more concrete?
Sure. We are focused this year on creating some really strong thought leadership out in the market. Ariba has moved from being an e-procurement company to really being a collaborative business commerce company. And so as a result, the target that we're trying to reach has broadened greatly, and some of those people have never heard of Ariba. So the CFO in the organization is someone that we're trying to reach. We know that that person is a hard person to get to get their attention. and also that they really, really value peer references and peer information as opposed to marketing information. So we partnered with CFO Magazine and did a research project where we were focused on priorities for CFOs in the post-recession economy. So what are they thinking about for the next 3 to 5 years, and what are they, you know, what are their key concerns, what keeps them up at night, that type of thing. So we partnered with CFO Magazine and are, you know, are trading on their brand and their network as well. And then we produced a study that's actually a fairly dense study. So you wouldn't necessarily want to send an email and say, here, download this study, because, you know, people's eyes may glaze over after page two. So what we've done is we've actually taken some of the key findings, and then we're promoting those key findings both in traditional ways. So it's actually going to be, there's an editorial piece that's going to be in CFO Magazine. There's you know, your traditional email marketing, but also having online discussions with the editor of CFO Magazine, where they'll be talking about key findings and soliciting input and having discussion with the CFO community. So we're blogging, we're using our Ariba Exchange community to do that, as well as doing other things like podcasts. And again, all of these activities are meant to start the discussion, not to be the end point. So everything links back to the Ariba Exchange discussion community so that the conversation can continue over the course of time.
So when you put this campaign together, which is very exciting to hear, because you just got, it's a very holistic campaign. Clearly it's extraordinarily well thought through. And you're going to have, you know, all these different channels, you know, chatting, talking, and, you know, discussing around this. What kind of revenue goals do you have from this kind of campaign?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because there are a couple of different ways that we see generating revenue. One is through more of the traditional marketing demand generation avenue. And the second is, you know, it's hard to get appointments for salespeople to get appointments with CFOs, especially if CFOs think that they're trying to sell them something. So one of the key assets that we're developing out of this study is a presentation, a 20-minute presentation that our sales folks can give to CFOs, so that when they're calling them to get an appointment, they're not saying, let me come talk to you about Ariba. They're saying, you know, we just did a study with CFO Magazine. I'd love 20 minutes of your time to share the results. And so there's really a direct approach too, because if we can get those meetings and establish those relationships, there's revenue that will come directly through that sales channel. But if you go to the traditional marketing channels, our revenue goals are really associated with with what we think we can generate, both in terms of top-end funnel activity and then ultimately appointments for the salespeople to follow up with. So, you know, we expect that we can get somewhere in the 10 to 12x return on our investment just from the marketing-generated activities.
That is excellent. And, again, what hallmark of a revenue marketer in that, you know, Rachel worked with the other executives in the organization to understand there's a problem. We need to get conversations with CFOs. So how do we do that? And then putting this project together and then being able to say, Debbie, we think we're going to get 10 to 12x return on our investment. Again, that's truly a hallmark of a revenue marketer. So when you think about this particular project, Rachel, have you done anything like this before where you had all the elements of traditional demand generation and social all working together behind one holistic campaign like this?
You know, we've done it in smaller venues. So we've incorporated social into smaller campaigns, but this is the first campaign that we've done of this magnitude where, you know, we really expect this campaign to take us through the next 6 to 8 months in terms of the level of activity. And part of it is just that we feel like the report is so rich that it gives us content to take us through that period of time. But we have done this, on a smaller scale when we've launched programs like, for example, if we have great analyst content, third-party content that we want to launch, we will always make sure that we have a kickoff meeting at the beginning of the campaign. And in that kickoff meeting, we've got the email people, the web people, the social people, as well as the copywriters, et cetera, so that everybody's sitting there and we're saying, okay, how are we going to touch all of these audiences in all of these different ways? And then if they respond favorably, what are we going to do next and next and next to kind of take them down that path?
So, Rachel, something you've said a couple of times, it just kind of makes me think about another question. And, that is, number one, holistic approach, demand generation, social, bringing the whole thing together, the conversation, the buzz. But at the heart of the two things that you've talked about, really the word content has come up twice or three times now. So clearly content is kind of the fuel for these kinds of programs. So in your demand generation approach and as it integrates with social, what kind of role does content play?
Content is critical, and I would say I have an enormous bias, having spent almost 8 years at KnowledgeStorm, which was really a content marketing company. I believe that content is critical for us because, in essence, it's the value that we're giving to the prospect in order to, in order to engage in a conversation. So we need to provide value up front for them to expect them to engage back with us. And so whether it's third-party content or content that we create on our own, we really feel strongly that it needs to be high quality and educational in nature in order to engage someone in a conversation.
Again, Rachel is just straight up and down the exact profile of a revenue marketer that you'd want to have. So, again, a great example is, a lot of marketers would tend to throw one gigantic report into the market. And what Rachel is looking to do is to parse it out in pieces so that there is an exchange of value that helps them continue that dialogue. And I agree with you. I also, Rachel, have a very, very big bias toward content. I think content is king in creating, digital relationships, because without it, where is that exchange of value? So I'm on your side on that one, absolutely. So
thanks.
One of the things that we've talked about is, clearly for demand generation to get social, you had to have some other kinds of elements in place, such as marketing automation. So what marketing automation system do you use, and kind of when and how did you add this as a key element to your marketing strategy?
We use Eloqua here at Ariba and have been using it for a little less than a year. And I think, for us, as we started to really look at having ongoing conversations as opposed to just talking at people over and over and over again, we realized that we needed a marketing automation infrastructure that the conversation requires much more complex processes, and in order to do that effectively, you can't do that manually. You need some sort of automation, and so that's what drove us to use a marketing automation system. And then on the flip side, I think our group happens to be a fairly analytical group, and understood that without the right systems in place, we couldn't really measure the results. Forget about the return on investment, but even just the results, we couldn't test, we couldn't be creative in the way that we feel like we need to be creative if we didn't have a mechanism to give us feedback in an automated fashion. And so really those are the key reasons that we move toward a marketing automation system.
Makes absolute sense. The ability to engage and have that digital dialogue, and then the ability to do the deep analytical work so that you could measure and improve You know, typically those are the top two reasons we see marketers buying marketing automation systems, and it's just absolutely positively true. So you guys have had Eloqua just a little bit less than a year, and they are just a great system. What were the lessons learned as you began to optimize Eloqua?
You know, that's a great question, and that's a question that I'm frequently asked, and I think if you ask 10 people who've purchased marketing automation systems, they'd probably all come back with a very similar answer, which is the implementation of a technology such as Eloqua is not a trivial exercise. It really requires a lot of upfront process reengineering, and because it touches so many different departments and has so many different stakeholders, it really requires a huge amount of upfront coordination and thought. And I think that we underestimated that, and so it's taking us a little bit longer to really take advantage of the more sophisticated functionality. Yes, we were able to easily implement and start using email marketing and some of the more rudimentary functionality, but to get the benefit of lead scoring and to really get the robustness of true lead nurturing, whether that's pre-sales ready leads or whether that's to help salespeople accelerate their sales stage progression, we really haven't taken advantage of those more sophisticated pieces of functionality because we now have to go back and re-engineer those processes to do so.
So really focusing on lead scoring, lead nurturing, probably overall lead management, how leads are passed over to sales, and then how the disposition is created in CRM. Those are all key processes that you guys are currently working on to improve?
Absolutely.
Okay. And again, we do see this quite often. So one of the things that we started to do at the Pedowitz Group is create for clients something called a revenue marketing playbook. And basically, for this exact reason, you know, implementing the technology, getting it up and running, getting those basic things done is very straightforward. But you're right, there's different people who are interacting with these processes at different places, and you just need more of a playbook around the people and the process part, not so much around the technology part. And Rachel, I believe you have a background in process reengineering, is that correct?
It is, and so I have to say I've been drawing on that background very frequently over the course of the past 10 months because, you know, it absolutely is a major software integration. It is not something that you can take lightly and assume it's plug and play.
I got to tell you, when we meet for lunch, I'd love to hear more about some of those, how your approach to reengineering has been. I'd really like to hear that. So you've had Eloqua for a while. You've been doing social media for a while. And when you take a look at Eloqua, what kind of metrics are you reporting on? And you said your group was deeply analytical, so I'm very interested in your metrics.
Yes, and I'll make a safe harbor statement up front, which is that, you know, I believe the metrics that we're looking at today are really only at a point, you know, relevant for this point in time, and that as we go along this journey, the metrics will evolve. As we become more sophisticated, the metrics will evolve. So some of the metrics we look at today are fairly rudimentary marketing metrics that you would look at using a regular email marketing system, such as, okay, you know, what's the open rate? What's the click-through rate? What's the level of completion of forms? And actually, those metrics are really important for us because they help us go back then and say, okay, we need to re-engineer our forms. We need to do progressive profiling because we're asking too many questions up front. Or, hey, we've hit the right balance, and now we're getting a much higher form fill rate, so we understand now that we're at the first form is the right length. Now we have to move on through the profiling process. So some of the metrics are as simple as those. You know, a lot of them are around lead scoring. So, you know, we'll look at how long is it taking someone to get to the score that we think is sales ready. How many touches is it taking? What types of paths are people taking in order to get to the point where they're sales ready? So there's a whole host of analysis. And then on the email side, we do a lot of A/B testing to understand what's relevant, especially as we go after new audiences. We need to figure out how best to communicate to them. We also track all campaigns in. We have an integration between Eloqua and Salesforce, and so we track all of the campaigns into Salesforce so that we absolutely can track back both opportunities that are created and where those come from, as well as closed business and where that originally was generated.
Now, Rachel, when we were right before the show started, one of the things that you had shared with me was that you were just in a meeting with your CEO talking about forecasting. So tell me about that, because typically CEO forecasting and marketing are not things that you would put into the same sentence.
That's absolutely right, and I have to say that it's a great feeling to be able to go into a meeting and with the sales executives talk about pipeline and say, okay, based on what we have seen historically using the metrics that we have from our marketing automation system as well as the metrics we have from our CRM system, we know that we are going to be generating X amount of pipeline over the course of the next quarter and the next rolling four quarters. And so we as a company know what our conversion rates are from pipeline to closed business. And so really it's a leading indicator of, are we doing enough? Do we have enough in the pipeline to generate the numbers we need to hit our ultimate bookings goals?
So can you share with us your contribution to revenue as a percentage?
We're assuming today that we're generating about 50% of the pipeline.
Okay.
And that marketing is generating 50% of the pipeline in what I'll call a direct way. You know, and again, I caveated this when I was talking yesterday, and I'll do it again now. You know, it's very difficult to quantify what PR and what analyst relations generate, but I know that it certainly helps the sales independent, you know, pipeline get generated. So I'm not accounting for any of that. I'm talking about direct pipeline, right? Stuff that we can track to a specific activity is about 50% of the pipeline. Our close rate on marketing generated pipeline is a little bit lower than it is on AE generated pipeline. And, you know, part of that is that typically account executives aren't putting pipeline into Salesforce.com until they're fairly certain that that opportunity has a good likelihood of closing, whereas
that's
the marketing
right.
pipeline goes in much earlier. And so, you know, it has a much longer journey to get from, you know, point A to dollars at
yeah.
the end of the funnel.
Yeah. I love the way you track this. I've never heard anybody articulate it like that, Rachel, but to say that 50% of the pipeline in a direct way, and then to think about how the close rate is a little bit lower on those marketing qualified leads that get passed, because you're right, they have a longer journey to go, and salespeople, you know, they're not going to put an opportunity in until they are forced. I mean, the ink
exactly.
has just got to be drying on the paper before a salesperson wants to put any kind of opportunity in there. So I think that is a great piece of detail that I think a lot of marketers perhaps had not thought of. So, again, what I like about what you're saying, Rachel, is, and again, clearly you have a background in sales as well, but just like the VP of sales has got some kind of predictable series of conversions as things move through the sales pipeline, you also have predictability in your lead funnel as it's coming down. And, you know, you just do the reverse math from close all the way up to lead, and that kind of tells you how much activity, what kinds of activity, what kinds of touches. And I think that you are just, I mean, for having done this less than a year, I got to say I'm quite blown away. Have you used a marketing automation system prior to you guys buying Eloqua?
You know, I had not, but at the same time, again, I've been doing this demand generation and content marketing, which is very direct in nature, for quite some time. And so as painful as it was, I think we were tracking this manually, so it really became part of our DNA. And quite frankly, I won't hire anyone in my group who doesn't feel the same passion for figuring out how what they do at the beginning is going to impact what the business does at the end of the day, right? So, you know, if you say, yeah, I do marketing because I think it's great, I can use my creativity and it's a lot of fun, and you're not worried about how it's going to impact the bottom line at the end of the day, you're not a really good fit for the marketing group at Ariba.
So, Rachel, how hard has it been to find qualified candidates who have that kind of passion?
You know, I think it's been easier than I thought it would be, and probably easier today than it was 10 years ago, because people are thinking, and I don't know whether it's the recession or the fact that technology is so pervasive today, whether it's CRM technology or marketing automation technology, that, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are really focused on marketing ROI and who get a kick out of figuring out the right formula that's going to get us the best result, and you know, that's what makes it fun.
And I will say that even in the last 2 years, I've seen a huge shift in the attitude of marketing and revenue. But you said something that I really want to ask you about, and that is you mentioned the phrase marketing ROI. So do you see any difference between marketing ROI and marketing that produces revenue or pipeline impact?
That's a great question, and probably a question that you can answer better than I can. To be honest, I think that when I talk about marketing ROI, for me at the end of the day, it's the justification. It's the numeric bottom line that says if I put X number of dollars into programs, I can get X number of dollars out in closed business. So at the end of the day, that's what I talk about when I talk about ROI. When I look at the return on programs per se, ROI is a hard thing to come by, especially if you're in a company where there's a really long sales cycle.
That's right.
I think the, you know, from my perspective, the earlier interim metric is really the return on dollars that you're putting into a marketing program that get you opportunities or leads. So everything that happens between that and the end of the day, you know, a lot of that's out of your control, right? A lot of that's up to the salespeople, et cetera.
And I think that's a great example. And again, I had a conversation just recently with a prospect, and they wanted to do a pilot. We love doing pilots. And I said, well, and they wanted to get return on revenue. That's what they, you know, how many deals can we close and get? Okay, well, how long is your sales cycle? Well, it's 12 months. And then I paused, and I said, you know, if you have a sales cycle that's 12 months, you know, why would we be, I mean, we'd have to run a pilot for 12 months to actually get to revenue. We have to back up and do some kind of other interim metrics. So I think, again, I think that's a very good detailed analytic that can really help marketers think when they're looking at marketing ROI, when they're looking at some kind of return. There's all different kinds of metrics they can start with, but you have to be realistic, and having the length of sales cycle known and calculating that in, I think, is absolutely key. So now, Rachel, clearly you've been at the executive level for quite some time in your career. What has having Eloqua, demand generation, you know, the power of the technology done for you as an executive?
That's a great question, Debbie. And I think, you know, for me, that's one of the things that's the most fun about having marketing automation is it really can it can give you a very good, quick overview of the health of your programs and your organization. And I think it can also point out some areas that need help relatively quickly. And so I use it, the executive dashboard type of functionality, almost as a good health check and diagnosis tool that I can then go back and say, okay, you know, guys, we really need to focus here. Here's where I think we're falling short. Because it really does give attribution to the things that are working well and raise red flags for the things that are, you know, that are not working well.
So let me ask you this. Before you guys began using a demand generation tool like Eloqua, would you have been able to have a forecast meeting with your CEO?
It would have been much, much more difficult. It would have been, and it would have probably been less accurate. So I would have been much more uncomfortable having it. That's the honest answer.
Yeah, a lot more fuzzy math would be involved.
Exactly. A lot of assumptions, right?
A lot of assumptions. Well, the provisos and the provisos are here.
Exactly.
So, Rachel, last question. So it's amazing to me, and I go around and I talk a lot, and I get a chance to meet so many great, phenomenal marketers. I think the space is still maybe only 9 or 10% saturated. So what would you share with a marketer who's just beginning to look at demand generation and social, both of those elements together? That's probably a huge question.
It is a huge question, but it's a fun question to answer. So I think, you know, there are a couple of key things. One is you've got to have a plan, right? If you dabble in a lot of things, you're never going to get the return that you want to get. And in essence, you're almost setting yourself up for failure. So I think you've got to have a plan, and you've got to make sure that your marketing mix is broad enough that you're feeding on the different activities that you have are feeding off of one another, and that you're not single threading so that, you know, if you don't get 10,000 Facebook followers at the end of the year, you've failed, right? The Facebook page is really just one element in a broader marketing mix. And if you only get 2,000 Facebook fans, but you get a whole lot of discussion and comments on your blog as a result of the fact that your blog is connected to your Facebook page, well, then, you know, then that may be a success. So I think it's both spreading your risk, but also looking at this as an ecosystem as opposed to siloed activities that you have. So I think that's, you know, that's one key. From a demand generation perspective, you know, I think creativity is essential, and the ability to try and fail, but fail fast, and then evaluate and figure out why you failed is key. So, you know, I love creativity on my team. I love people who want to do a lot of A/B testing, because I think that's how we learn, and then we can apply that, you know, more broadly across our programs. If you single thread, I think you set yourself up for failure, because you don't really know if something doesn't succeed, you're not quite sure why, and then you really have to go back to square one and start all over again. So I think doing a lot of activities simultaneously, doing A/B testing, and being willing to try things that may not succeed, and, you know, not getting discouraged as a result of that, those are really, I think, you know, my key areas of advice for people.
I love that advice. First of all, in the world of social and demand generation, really having an ecosystem where everything is feeding into everything else, I completely agree with that, and I think that is a great piece of advice. And then on the other area, I had a really good client of mine who's actually a good friend of mine now, Jim Kaner at M5 Networks. He was the first one I ever heard use the phrase "fail forward and fail fast," and you absolutely positively have to allow for that. So I think those are two great pieces of advice. Any final words, Rachel, for the new marketer out there that you'd like to share as we close our conversation today?
You know, I think at the end of the day, all of this, whether it's social or demand generation, things are changing so rapidly, and we're in such a dynamic space and such an exciting space that, you know, that there's not a formula for success. There are many formulas for success, and those formulas change weekly. And so it's a great great, exciting place to be, especially if you like change and you like learning new things. But I would always, you know, I would run away from someone who tells you they have the blueprint for success, because I think we're all in this together and we're all figuring this out together. And as soon as we figure it out, it's changing and we need to figure it out again.
I could not agree more. And like you, it's the part of the space that's the most exciting to me, is that there is no one blueprint right now. Everything is changing so quickly. And again, just the pure dynamic nature of this market makes it very exciting for me as well. Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Debbie. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. And again, everyone listening, our next show will be on March 17th, and we're going to be featuring Evan White Knight of Reach Forth, and he is going to tell us the story of lessons learned from an easy bake oven. So you guys are going to have to listen to that episode. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Rachel, thank you for being on the show. Everyone have a fabulous week.
Take care.